2. All phenomena are not apart from intrinsic nature. The Platform Sutra, Fascicle on Prajna, says, intrinsic nature embodies myriad dharmas. Myriad dharmas are within intrinsic nature. Here, myriad dharmas include all phenomena both within and beyond this world. What is often mentioned in modern philosophy, such as materiality, mentality, knowledge, etc., are all within the scope of dharmas, phenomena. In terms of form or appearance, phenomena are innumerable and varied. In terms of their essence, however, there is only one, not two, as all phenomena are mere manifestations of the mind. Let us talk a bit about the relationship between mind and nature. Generally speaking, mind and nature are two concepts that should not be used interchangeably. In the broad sense, besides meaning the mind itself, mind can also allude to its many manifestations and functions. In the narrow sense, however, mind is only limited to meaning, mental consciousness, and mental conditions or attributes. Nature normally refers to the corpus or essence. In the broad sense, there is generally a distinction between true mind and deluded mind, where true mind is the corpus or essence of mind. In the narrow sense, nature means the corpus or essence, while mind is the function of nature. It is only with regard to mind, not nature, that there is the distinction of pure and defiled, arising and cessation. This is the general understanding. In the Platform Sutra, however, mind and nature are often used interchangeably without a distinctive line drawn between them, which is why we can say all phenomena are not apart from intrinsic nature, or all phenomena are not apart from the mind. This is the sense found in the Platform Sutra as illustrated in the great capacity of mind is like empty space that can hold all phenomena, and how unexpected of intrinsic nature to be able to give rise to the myriad phenomena. Regardless of whether we are talking about mind or nature, there is only one view, and that is, all phenomena arise but from the mind. The myriad things we see around us, like the seas and the mountains, sentient beings within the 6 paths of transmigration, the 10 Dharma realms, and everything else in the universe, are not apart from the true suchness of intrinsic nature. They are all manifested through our consciousness of mind. The following quotation from the sutra that we daily recite also points to the same revelation. If people want to fully understand all Buddhas of the three eras, they should contemplate on the nature of the Dharma realms to see that everything is but created by the mind. In cultivation, why do we have to emphasize myriad dharmas are not apart from intrinsic nature? It is to remind us that in the process of cultivation, we must be mindful at every instant to purify our mind and thought, taking the mind as anchor and not venture outside of it. In other words, if we depart from our intrinsic nature and do not engage in purification of mind in our practice, it is impossible to find emancipation. Buddhism emphasizes introspection instead of looking for pure land outside of the mind. It tells us to bring our actions and thoughts back on the right path through reform and purification, and to discover the luminosity and wisdom within us. The Buddha is within our mind, and so is Pure Land. Pure Land is realized through a pure mind. Being a worldling is due to the deluded mind, and being a Buddha is due to the enlightened mind. Hence, the essence of cultivation is cultivation of the mind. Mind is the key to liberation. In saying this, however, we are not denouncing the teaching of the Pure Land School, which clearly indicates aspiration towards onward birth in the Western paradise of ultimate bliss, a Buddha land extremely distant from this world. In this respect, however, there is actually no contradiction at all with the Chan school, for the Pure Land school teaches in the ultimate that Pure Land is determined by the mind, and Amitabha is within intrinsic nature. That means when the cultivation of mindfulness of the Buddha is at its utmost, the Western paradise of ultimate bliss is at one with our intrinsic nature. Buddha and us, Pure Land and this world, are not two, but within one mind. Exactly because Amitabha Buddha and the Western paradise of ultimate bliss are within our mind, we need only raise our sense of right mindfulness at the time of our death, bearing in mind the Buddha's name, and we can reach the Western paradise within one moment of thought. If we acknowledge the above, we shall have more faith in our practice. Our cultivation will thus be more substantial and closer to our heart. There is no element of superstition or mysticism involved. In simple terms, as long as we are willing to work hard on our cultivation, being able to be mindful and lucidly aware of each and every moment without ever departing from the here and now, we would have mastered our own mind, and our every thought would then be pure and undefiled. As such, Pure Land would be right before our eyes, and liberation would become a reality. 3. Through verbal utterance and cultivation of mind, practice for deliverance of oneself and others. In the fascicle on Prajna, the sixth patriarch said, "Good Dharma friends, the expression Mahaprajna Paramita is Sanskrit, and it means reaching the other shore through perfect wisdom, which requires cultivation of mind, not oral chanting. Verbal utterance without cultivation of mind is like illusion and mirage, like dewdrops and lightning. Oral chanting coupled with cultivation of mind will bring speech and action into consonance." The patriarch's words were directed at the vogue of the time, which was heavily weighted in favor of the written word. Academic studies and discourses on the sutras, as opposed to actual cultivation, he was adamant in pointing out that actual cultivation should be at the center of Buddhist practice. Buddhist practice is not Buddhist studies. The latter is knowledge, while the former is application of Buddhist teachings. The objective of Buddhist practice is to find liberation. Buddhist teachings are found in the Tripitaka canon, and as a Buddhist follower, one should, of course, access the Sutra Pitaka. However, one must be careful not to treat the sutras academically like secular scholars, but should aim to gain deeper understanding into the way and attain the wisdom necessary for guidance through cultivation. The value of Buddhist teachings lies in its application in daily living, and every true Buddhist should aim at putting the Buddha's teachings into practice in every facet of life. Anyone who only pays lip service to Buddhism cannot be called a Buddhist. A true Buddhist practitioner is one who is demurely engaged in cultivation, not one who makes a lot of noise. Those who do so under the banner of Buddhism to draw attention are usually there for fame and fortune. Words alone can never replace deeds. 1,000 words spoken are no match for one line that is seriously put into practice. Not only do we have to engage in cultivation, but we also need to initiate the great vow and resolve to deliver others for their enlightenment. Buddhist practice is not only for one's own liberation, but also that of others. This is the spirit of the Mahayana, as well as the assurance for accomplishment of Buddhahood. We often talk of the aspiration to cultivate the Bodhisattva path for accomplishment of Buddhahood. The word bodhisattva has the meaning of the awakened sentient one, or the sentient one awakened for the sake of awakening other sentient ones. The word Buddha denotes self-awaken to awaken others, the full and perfect accomplishment of enlightenment. We can thus derive from these meanings the fundamental spirit of a bodhisattva and a Buddha. That is to say, if we cannot benefit, awaken, and deliver others, we are not qualified to be a bodhisattva or a Buddha. In practicing the Bodhi way, it says in the teachings that we should take bodhicitta, the Bodhi mind, as the cause, compassion as the basis, expediency as the ultimate. Hence, bodhicitta, compassion, and expediency all arise for the sake of sentient beings. Bodhicitta is the great resolve to cultivate on the Buddhist path for the deliverance of all sentient beings. And at the core of it is great compassion. Great compassion is the heart of sympathy, empathy, and resolve to help deliver all sentient beings without discrimination of any kind, embracing even those for whom one has no affinity, and regardless of their origins. In terms of space, it covers all lands, countries, regions, not only in this world, but also in other worlds. In terms of time, it is not limited to the present, but is unlimited in span, not only during meditative practice or while chanting the Buddha's name, but incessantly during all waking times. Such great compassion is described in the fascicle on the practice and vows of Samantabhadra Bodhisattva as the root and water of the king Bodhi tree, to highlight its significance in the cultivation for liberation and accomplishment of Buddhahood. Like a tree that will die without its roots and water, the tree of Bodhi will wither without great compassion. This spirit to benefit, awaken, and deliver others is resonated in the texts of the four great vows and the three refuges that Buddhists recite in their daily practice to remind them of the importance of compassion and bodhicitta that are imperative to Mahayana practice for accomplishment of Buddhahood. Please remember that the above mentioned must be put into practice, even if only gradually. But of course, time is of the essence. Hence, the sooner, the better. For a practitioner, the process of cultivation itself is simultaneously an act to benefit others. In removing the obscurations of greed, aversion, and delusion within us during cultivation, we have to extend our capacity of heart and mind to embrace others. Through our concern to benefit others, it can actually help our cultivation to relinquish attachment to the self. Therefore, In the process of Mahayana cultivation, great compassion for the benefit of others is the fundamental spirit that is essential for cultivation of the six paramitas, four immeasurables, and four all-embracing virtues. Let us not assume that Buddhist practice is only limited to the reciting of sutras, the burning of incense, sitting meditation, and prostrations in front of Buddha images. On top of all these, it is vital to practice the six paramitas, four all-embracing virtues, etc., for the benefit of oneself and others. 4. Perfection of Bodhi, the return to non-attainment. Finally, let me talk about the mind of non-attainment. What is the aim of cultivation? It is to turn afflictions into Bodhi, living and dying into Nirvana, to forsake the mundane for enlightenment, to let go of delusion and return to the true. In the ultimate, however, it is for perfection of Bodhi, the return to non-attainment. Why do we say it is the return to non-attainment? It is because the intrinsic nature of Bodhi is inherent in us all, complete with perfect wisdom and merits. The fact that it is inherent in us implies that nothing has actually been gained through cultivation, and that we are only rediscovering what is already there within us. The difference between an enlightened one and a worldling is not what the former has attained, but that having let go of all attachments and extirpated all desires, the enlightened one has found the treasure within. Whereas the worldling, who also has the same treasure within, has it obscured by afflictions and unwholesome habituations, rendering it inaccessible for rediscovery. Having made this clear, we would understand that cultivation is, in essence, the banishment of affliction and ignorance, delusion and attachment, such that the intrinsic nature of Bodhi would manifest. There is nothing to be attained. The more and faster we can let go, the quicker and easier the emancipation. Therefore, we have to establish the right view on cultivation, and that is non-attainment. Cultivation is not to attain fame and fortune, but instead to give and contribute. Once we have entered the door of Buddhism, we must be ready to let go in order to serve and contribute. To let go is to be awakened to the true reality of life, and to give is to offer a life of service and contribution. Letting go is to give more generously and earnestly. In cultivation, only letting go would allow our intrinsic nature to come alive, and it is only by offering to contribute that our capacity of mind would be augmented, Hence, the emphasis on non-attainment in cultivation.